Kinky Friedman, singer-songwriter, satirist, author, journalist, Texas politician, is now touring the East Coast in support of his new album entitled The Loneliest Man I Ever Met. Kinky Friedman, thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Dave, a pleasure to be here.
Now, I'm going to try to attend to all of the above, but in our time together, let's make sure we touch on the music first. This is your first studio album in several decades. What led you to scratch that itch?
Life does get in the way. Politics, writing books. The main reason I did this record was because I was badgered and hectored by a man named Brian Molnar, and I met him about 10 years ago at a show in New Jersey. And he's persistent in doing a record like this and doing it at the ranch, which means not a real recording studio. And he brought down Joe Cerati, who's a virtuoso guitarist, and then Mickey Rayfield, Willie Nelson's harmonica player, who is the greatest. And really, that's what you're hearing mostly on The Loneliest Man I Ever Met. On this record, you're hearing two instruments, and it is stripped down to the soul. But I think that kind of gives you room to, you know, bring your own imagination to the party.
In a sense, it's coming full circle. Back in 1998, on your Pearls in the Snow album, you had Willie Nelson perform and Tom Waits.
That's right. And I felt bad about Waits. I hadn't seen him in a long time. We used to hang out with our friend Chuck E. Weiss out in Hollywood many years ago.
You thank in part George Frain, Commander Cody, for helping you get your first record contract.
And he also got it on the label that passed on Bob Dylan, Vanguard Records.
You toured with Bob Dylan during his Rolling Thunder review in 76, I believe.
That was an amazing experience in a lot of ways. And I found that if you're playing for 50,000 people, that's easier to do than playing for a couple hundred in a club.
How so?
Well, you're like a star when you get up there on stage. You're not really. It's a whole different art. And the other one is like cabaret. It's like the people are kind of organic. I mean, and with the way we're doing this, the Willie Nelson method, never taking a day off for 35 shows, you will be running on pure adrenaline after a while. And I'm almost there right now. You know, you start hearing Hank Williams and Jesus Christ and Johnny Appleseed and Lenny Bruce all speaking to you. So it's kind of a spiritual endurance thing. So far, it's not only been a financial pleasure, but it's been a spiritual one as well.
Now, Kinky, I take it you don't embarrass easily, but explain how you passed on the opportunity to write and or record with both Bob Dylan and Shel Silverstein.
I don't know. I read in Woody Guthrie's biography that Woody did pretty much the same thing. Every great opportunity he had in life, he just threw it away almost deliberately. The thing with Bob was just Bob wanted to write a record. He wanted to write an album. You know, let's do it. And we were on the island of Jalapa right after the Rolling Thunder review. And I just didn't feel like it. I thought we ought to rest up, you know. I mean, everybody was tired. Looking back on it, I mean, anybody would go ahead and write the record with Bob, but that would be a practical, rational move. And I think it's probably the reason Bob and I are still in touch today and our linkage is still strong. And that's why the song, Girl from the North Country, is not so much a cover. But in this case, it's kind of halfway between Bob and me. And I asked Mickey Rayfield, I said, give us early, skinny, Jewish, palpably Bob Dylan harmonica. And Mickey explained to me, he said, Kinky, this is not karaoke. I've got to interpret this song the way I feel it. And so, to me, the record has really become kind of not so much a record as a mirror.
We are post the heyday of karaoke, hopefully for many, but describe the music scene in 2015, and could a Willie Nelson or Bob Dylan or even Kinky Friedman emerge in this climate?
No, absolutely not. Everything has changed. I don't know the answer for why great songs are not being written today. I think Willie and Bob and Merle and Billy Joe Shaver and Christofferson, if they wrote a great song today, would we even know it? I'm not sure that the culture would accept it. And also, I think success distances you from your art. So, really, The Loneliest Man I Ever Met, that song, was written when my friend Will Hoover and I, 30 years ago in Nashville, were struggling songwriters. And looking back on it, what a beautiful spiritual state to be a struggling songwriter. It's a very pure, raw feeling. And maybe it wasn't that much fun at the time, but it is something I strive for. And Billy Bob Thornton says the same thing. Stay hungry. Just stay hungry if you can.
I understand you're involved with a project with Billy Bob.
We're involved in a couple of things. you know, when you say there's something in the works in Hollywood, I don't like to talk about it because most of the time it doesn't happen. But he's a, you know, maybe one of the very greatest actors we got left. But if Billy Bob winds up playing this quirky Jewish detective in New York, this thing could be bigger than The Hobbit, Dave.
You cited political correctness, and yeah, George Carlin and Mel Brooks and Richard Pryor probably couldn't do what they do now. I don't think political correctness held you back, though, when you were running for office.
Well, something did. I think what did is, you know, we won that race every place but Texas. And
explain.
We did get 13% of the vote of the best of Texas. But yeah.
Now, this is the 2006 gubernatorial
campaign?
That's
right, the independent race. And I mean, there were things about that race that a lot of people don't realize. I was the first statewide candidate in America that endorsed gay marriage in 2005, back when Hillary and Obama were dead set against it. You know, that's when I said they have every right to be just as miserable as the rest of us.
But not just that. You, at the same time, endorsed school prayer.
Yeah. What's wrong with believing in something? They took the Ten Commandments out of the public schools. I said, put them back in. You know, maybe we'll just change their name to the Ten Suggestions.
Now, that sounds politically correct.
Yeah.
I don't know about morally correct.
But let me tell you, I've come to, you know, I call the two political parties the Crips and the Bloods, and I said they were the same guy admiring himself in the mirror. And everybody was saying, oh, the politicians aren't that. But politicians are like abusive spouses. They come around to us every 4 years or so and say, hey, baby, I really love you. You know, if you want honesty, you want friendship, get a Walmart greeter, you know, which is something I might become. My career goes south.
I understand the Friedman Dictionary has a unique meaning for politics.
Yes. My definition of politics is poly means more than one, and ticks are blood-sucking parasites. These guys have no inspirational qualities whatsoever. I kind of like Bernie because I'd like to see a Jew in the White House. But beyond that, and Trump is right about political correctness, but he's wrong about not ever being able to be Mr. Anonymous, you know, the guy who gives. Is there ever a time that he gave money to a children's hospital or something and didn't slam his name up on the wall, you know? That would be nice.
You cannot be put in a political box. You've been invited to the White House under the administrations of both George W. Bush and Bill Clinton.
That's right. I'm the only man who slept at the White House under two presidents.
There you go.
And they're both very charming. Of course, anybody that's gotten that far, I guess, is charming and probably totally insane. I don't know. Bill, I think he's great. And W is much better than when you see him on television. It's just not his. Television is not his thing. To meet him in person, you'd be charmed in 3 minutes. I, myself, I'm good for 3 minutes of superficial charm. And then I can see the pity in people's eyes.
I think you have a soft spot for a fellow Texan is what it is in part.
Well, that could be. That could be, yeah. But the inspirational thing is missing, and we go back. I think, Dave, you know this story of Nelson Mandela. It's more than a story. When I was in South Africa in 96 with his right-hand man who was in the prison cell next to Mandela on Robben Island. This guy's name was Tokyo Seshwale, spelled sex whale, and he was Mandela's right-hand man. He's the one who told me that they used to try to smuggle in tape cassettes as best they could, and they somehow got a hold of Sold American, my first record, and Mandela started playing Ride 'em Jew Boy late at night, and it would be the last song he would play every night. And, you know, you look at the continent of Africa, do you see any Mandelas springing up there? I mean, you really don't. And when we recorded that record, Sold American, in 1973 in Nashville, people told us, you know, you never know who's going to hear a record like this. We were just wondering, will the disc jockeys understand it? Will they play it? And, you know, the last thing in my mind was that Nelson Mandela will be listening to this in his prison cell on Robben Island.
I've heard you say that your best song is your next song, but in that context, would you say that Ride 'em Jew Boy is among the songs of which you're most proud?
Ride 'em Jew Boy, Wild Man from Borneo. I think the loneliest man I ever met is connecting with a lot of people. The album is romantic. Some say melancholy, but I think it's romantic, and I think true romance is always tragic. True love usually winds up in a hostage situation. You know, if Romeo and Juliet had lived happily ever after, we wouldn't even know their names.
Now, Kinky, I'm not going to go with the insanity, but you admitted to this son of a shrink that there's a Friedman neurosis. And with that, I wonder if it traces back in part to the Friedmans always being outsiders, starting with when your family moved from Chicago to Texas.
Well, I lived in Chicago 1 year, couldn't find work, moved to Texas. By the way, I should mention there were four Jew boys from Chicago at that time, Shel Silverstein, Steve Goodman, Warren Zevon, and Kinky. And that's pretty good for one town.
Austin, Texas, which is close to your home now, is also one of the capitals of the music world.
It is. It's getting a little bit corporate right now. You know, it's turning into Dallas with guitars. But I think the problem is that this talent pool is very technical. Like, there's, you can see a kid in every city in this country that plays guitar like Stevie Ray Vaughan or does something, sounds a little bit like Roger Miller or something like this. But it all sounds pretty derivative these days to me. Maybe it's because they're writing these songs by committee. You know, you got four or five people writing them. Maybe it's because the writers of the songs were not miserable when they wrote it. I mean, if you want to be a songwriter, step one is you've got to be miserable. And I've always defined an artist as anyone who's ahead of his time and behind on his rent. When I was a kid, I wanted to grow up to be a Black Baptist minister.
How did that work out for you?
It didn't work out for me very well. I was very disappointed in a lifetime of disappointments. That was certainly one of them. In fact, when I look at it, I've been miserable for about 68 years, Dave, but things are starting to look up now.
They make medication for that, Kinky.
No, I've taken enough medication.
I'm talking about your own brand of tequila.
Mexican mouthwash.
There you go.
Tequila, that is my new drink, and it's a wonderful stage drink. I call it the Barry Manilow drink. That makes you feel good for a short period of time. And we have our own tequila company, Man in Black Tequila in Texas. And we like to say this is not your father's tequila. This is your grandfather's gardener's tequila.
I can't let you go before I ask if you still have a dog named Winston Churchill. And with that, tell us about the latest goings on at the Utopia Animal Rescue Ranch.
Yeah, thanks. As Will Rogers said, if there are no dogs in heaven, I want to go where they went. Winston Randolph Spencer Churchill Friedman is one of my four dogs, one of the Friedmans. And, yeah, they're all doing very well. I've got about eight people looking after them while I've never been gone this long, 6 weeks solid. And so the Friedmans are pretty neurotic, as you might expect, taking that probably directly from my brain. But they're happy. The rest of the dogs at the rescue ranch are doing well, too. And we take in any stray or abused animal. This kind of transcends politics. You'll see very conservative Republicans like Lamar Smith, congressman, who has an abiding love for animals and who's involved with Utopia Rescue Ranch for several decades now.
Good luck on the balance of this extensive tour. Good luck with the loneliest man I ever met. Thanks for spending time with us on Newsworks tonight.
Thank you, Dave. We appreciate it.